listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only podcast in the world about Magic the Gathering, the card game that everybody loves. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza. This is Am I the Bullcast podcast where people call in, talk about stories where they might have been the villain or maybe sometimes their pet peeves surrounding Magic the Gathering. But before we get into the episode, I want to say that we got ourselves some co-hosts to introduce. Just like every single episode before, you might know this first guy sharing an office with me in a separate country, separate city, but we're still just across the hall from each other. You know him as Games Freak SA, as the writer of the How They Brew It column over at Commander's Herald, where I also have my column, Am I the Bullest? Forgot to mention that. Please welcome Michael Solani.
Man, I only got 2 hours of sleep last night. We are raring to go.
Yeah, baby. And I drank 3 Pepsis to counteract your lack of sleep.
Just Pepsis.
Just, I'm trying to caffeinate.
I thought you were going to say some sort of alcoholic drink. Actually, yesterday I drank a ton of caffeine. The two things might be related, by the way. So I drank a ton of caffeine, like a full 16-ounce coffee. People on energy drinks are 100% snickering to themselves right now. And I was like,
you hear me snicker?
I was like, right now. Actually focused for the entire day. And I was like, oh my God, is this how normal people are supposed to feel all the time? I was like able to do the dishes. It was ridiculous.
Oh,
I don't know.
Well, look at that.
I probably have some ADHD.
Hey, you know, and now we're learning about you. Speaking of learning, we got ourselves a genius, our team genius over here. Our fantastic producer and genius. Did I mention genius? Also in another country in the same office down the hall, our producer Morgan Sanchez. Hi, Morgan.
Hey, Mark. Yeah, I'm just here.
I can hear you snickering.
At least I, because as an energy drinker, the amount of caffeine that I consume every day is too much. It's
you're an energy drinker. What
do
are
you drink?
Satya?
I am an.
I need to know how many milligrams of caffeine do you consume every day? What is your daily carry, your EDC?
So my caffeine mana value is anywhere from 300 to 600 per day.
I wish I had a frame of reference for what that meant.
I just go by what feels right.
Milligrams, mana value. It's the new way that they say it these days. So it's not cost. It's not like your caffeine cost. It's like your caffeine mana value.
Converted mana caffeine.
Yes.
Converted mana caffeine.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, before we get too deep in making some stuff up, I do want to say we have ourselves a sponsor this week. Our sponsor this week is CardSphere, an online marketplace for trading and selling Magic the Gathering cards. And this is how easy it is. You don't need to start with any money. It's like your cards are your wallet, and you can start trading today. I've got a stack of cards right here that I'm looking to trade. I list them up on CardSphere, and I'll have a list of stuff that I want from CardSphere. And then you're just trading with people online. So you go to CardSphere, get your cards here. And if you click the link in our description, that'll let them know that we sent you. It'll help us a lot. So please go ahead, sign up for CardSphere. When you do, it'll make us real happy. So there we go. Look at that. We got ourselves a little sponsor. We got ourselves a sponsor for this episode over here.
I'd like to point out that CardSphere, get your cards here, is not the official tagline of CardSphere.
It's not, but I think it should be. It's very close.
It's very good.
Thank you.
I think they should just take it. Just that's how we're sponsoring them back with catchy taglines.
Yeah, we gave them the tagline. I know, Morgan, you had a CardSphere story to share today that we saved for a sponsored segment. Tell us about what you got in the mail.
Yes. I use CardSphere all the time. Like I'll spend like Saturday nights just like browsing the sets, and I am collecting. Full disclosure, collecting a full foil set of Odyssey. So if you have, and just old border foils in general, I will take them from you. If they are in stacks of 5Ks, you can PM me, even if it's not on my wants list, and I will probably take it from you for big monies. One of the advantages with CardSphere is that there doesn't always need to be like a set price with a thing. I can offer like 200%+ of the value of a card. So if I really want it, I will be paying you for it, I promise. But just recently, I was looking for my darling Abishan, Cephalid Emperor.
Yeah.
And I saw on Cardsphere that there were some like slightly played and like lightly played copies. And I was like, I really want like a near mint one. And I've been chasing, like, it's super weird because these certain cards that are within like the $10 to $30 value that like I never just want to buy. I want to like find them in a cool way. Like, I want to get the perfect one. Yeah. I want to get a near mint one. I want to like, you know, see what it looks like and that kind of thing. I put it on my wants list. And like the next day it was already like in the mail coming to me, and I took like a screenshot and like put it in the Discord. I was like, I get him, and he just got here, and he's so gorgeous and wonderful and beautiful. So thank you to the user whose permission I did not get to say your name live on the air, so I won't, but you are wonderful. And so is Abishan
Cephalid Emperor, the OG. Brilliant. Like, the really loved this card when I was a kid. You know what else?
Back when we started playing, right? You and I both, right? Yeah, around Odyssey Block time.
Not too far off. Either way, I did a similar thing where I bought a Think Tank in foil, which is an uncommon from Odyssey. I did it. I found it for cheap, and I thought it'd be a fun include to have like a dumb card that nobody should really use in my Arami of the Dead Tide deck. And then I realized, oh man, it's a dumb card and I shouldn't use it in this deck. So I took it out, and now I've just got a really pretty foil Think Tank in my binder that isn't worth anything.
You can send
it's
it to
just
me.
Really nice to look at. And maybe. I was just about to say, if it's one that you're missing, you can have it. I'll send it your way, or I'll bring it to you next time I'm in Chicago. Look, thank you, Cardsphere, for sponsoring us. Really, really appreciate that. Everybody, click the link in our description. Really helps us. Make sure they know that we sent you. Speaking of sending me, let's talk about a set that's really sending me. This set is making me lose my mind. We just had Modern Horizons 3 launch 2 weeks ago. And by 2 weeks ago, I mean it comes out this Friday. Yeah, whatever. We record in advance. It's just how we have to be. And now that the whole thing is spoiled, the whole thing is previewed. It's available online. I've seen some like the pre-release. I've seen some Commander gameplay content with Commander at home and the spike feeders. You know, there's so much interesting stuff in these decks, so much interesting stuff in this set. And I'm really, really jazzed about it. I'm loving this set so far. And I think it'd be fun to take a moment and kind of riff on our friend Kyle Massa's column over at EDH Rec, the 600, which no longer operates as the 600, by the way. The 600 used to be, the column was, he would predict whether or not commanders would be more or less popular than 600 decks on EDH Rec. But now there's so many commanders out there, so many players out there, it's impossible not to go above 600. So it's now 1200 and it's called Over Under. So make sure you check out Kyle's column on EDH Rec. But we're going to do a little version of that for ourselves and talk about some Modern Horizons legends and see what we predict is going to be, you know, a popular legend, maybe a popular commander.
I can't believe it's up to 1200 now. This economy is crazy.
It's doubled.
The inflation is thanks, Biden.
God,
rest in peace.
We promised we wouldn't get political, Michael.
That's a standard joke. I once made a similar joke on one of my set reviews, and I got like 5 comments for it. And I'm like, come on, guys, don't overdo this.
Whatever, you know.
Can't believe out the word Biden.
Yeah.
No, don't. Why? What?
Uh-oh.
Oh God.
So I'll admit that getting into this, I have some bias because I actually just edited Kyle's set review, which is the Over Under.
Yeah.
So I did read it.
Yeah.
But
so
I
you
promise
have to recuse
you,
yourself.
Oh, so
you... I have to say that I want to talk about like exactly one really interesting card, and I promise this is nothing from Kyle. It's completely my own opinion. Because I noticed that there was an interesting Esper commander. And this is my opinion.
Is there an Esper commander?
Orna Kenarud, Sky Captain.
Yeah.
And it has a really interesting, like, counter interaction situation. And it has, like, what I want to say is kind of like a decent ward cost for your opponent, which is like discard a card because you can kind of use that to synergize with your own deck. Potentially, it's not just like a hard mana cost, like you have to pay 40 mana to kill this thing with one card.
It's not Voya.
Yeah. So Arna is interesting and cool because they are an Esper commander with flying and lifelink. The ward cost is discard a card. Whenever a modified creature you control attacks, double the number of each kind of counter on it. Then for each non-token permanent attached to it, create a token that's a copy of that permanent attached to that creature.
Yeah. Look, 5-mana 4/4 flying lifelink with ward is already pretty solid as a beater, but then, oh no, let's make it counter shenanigans and also double the auras or equipment that are on it, or maybe even listens.
I'm surprised it doesn't have a higher number of decks. Like right now, as we're sitting,
I know you're trying to get my goat with that listens comment, Mike.
I did try to do it. I did.
Not gonna work. I already did this deck in two different manners. Like this is
okay.
This is listens, and this is also the same thing that Staying can do. This is just a Staying deck because God forbid Gruul have anything interesting.
Well, yeah. Remember when Rada, the Burst of Keld, the one that could look at the top of your library, came out? She had just gained something that was originally just given to white. Just recently, it was some sort of God. I remember it, but I don't remember it. That's how bad that was. Anyway,
first strike.
So what do we think in terms of Arna? What's your guys' opinion? I don't want to say until you guys say first.
I don't think it's going to be all that popular. It's a theme that's delicate, but also it's got a lot of like there's a lot of hoops, but it's also very powerful. There's a lot going on. It doesn't really feel very Esper. It'll slot well in Knight shenanigans for counters more likely than like aura or you know whatever, but I think it's cool. I just think it's like so close to what I did with my three dog Ariette secret commander deck, and so I'm a little offended. But that said, I don't think that this is going to be super popular. I don't think so.
Yeah, this ain't gonna make it. It's not gonna get there.
I think in the new set there are 24 new legendary creatures that can be your commander in the main set, and then 8 in the commander set. And I want to talk about one from the commander set that I think is going to be honestly like really good. And I think people are going to be beside themselves being like, I think this is one of those decks that I'm not going to like playing against for a little bit, and then eventually it'll be cool. Khorram the Undertaker, 1 and a Jund for a 0/5 human warrior. But don't worry, because he gets +X/+0. Where X is the greatest power among creature cards in all graveyards. Whenever Khorram attacks, each player mills a card. Yes, please. During each of your turns, you may play a land and cast a spell from among cards in graveyards that were put there from libraries this turn. So you can play a land and cast a single spell each of your turns that you milled. And so I think this is going to be pretty silly.
And, seems kind of dangerous. It's not, like face value looks almost underpowered, but it's one of those things that's how like power creep works. You think like, oh, this can't be good. Oh, but like the fact that you have multiple avenues of interaction, that's where the power level is.
What's the biggest power available in these colors? What is it? I think I have a feeling it's like that impervious great worm. It's like
it's probably Lord of Extinction.
Oh, that's right. The star costs could also be, I was about to say Yargle and Multani, 16.
See, this is why you need me on the podcast.
Yeah, you should be on. That's why you should be speaking up about it. But speaking of Michael, what legend has got you thinking that Modern Horizons might have some really well played or built around commanders?
Let me tell you about this new commander.
Oh boy.
He's a legendary bird wizard. And whenever he gives all of your creatures, whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land, you put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, you put it into your hand. This ability triggers only twice each turn.
No.
This one.
Bad.
It's going to be popular. Already a CDH it's going to make it, too.
Michael, it's the only one I've seen built already. It's already.
I don't understand.
Up
why are people building this? It's just Tatiova. They made like a 5th, 10th Tatiova. You don't need all of these. One of these days on April 1st, I'm going to make a deck that's just all the Simic legends that say draw a card, put a land onto the battlefield, put a land onto the battlefield, draw a card. That's all they do. It's either that or they're terrible. It's one of the two. There is no in between. show me a mid Simic deck.
I can't believe I couldn't find one. Experiment Crash can be built really poorly. All right. Nadu Winged Wisdom is the card that Michael's talking about. And that's already seeing play in CDH, which is bonkers to me.
Yeah, Shuko's really like 15 bucks now.
It's crazy. It's not. Okay.
Oh,
no.
Morgan, what is that?
What is that?
That is our functioning soundboard with presumably another legend on the line. Let's see who it is.
Is that a landline?
It's what our switchboard has always sounded like. Are we going to answer this? Okay, I think I should answer this.
Just let it go to voicemail.
No, okay, I'll let it go to voicemail. No way. We just skipped the whole... Okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to do this. Okay, let's answer the call. All right, we got a caller on the line. Caller, who am I talking to?
Hi, Mike. It's Joey from EDH Rec. I hope you're having a lovely day.
Hello, Joey. Thanks for calling in. Look who it is on my little podcast. Joey Schultz of the EDH Rec Cast. Nice to have you. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this. I'm so glad. I'm really flattered. I'm excited, too.
I've been a longtime listener of the EDH Rec Cast, of course. You know, it's when there's so many Magic podcasts, but very few get into the nitty-gritty of the data and keep things still so interesting, even when talking about numbers a lot. You know, you guys have a great rapport. You guys are silly goofs.
Thank you.
And start off with the dad jokes and everything.
Believe it or not, the thing I'm calling in about is not dad jokes. I promise.
I was going to ask. I had to. But nice to have you calling in. Thank you so much. All the way from the West Coast, talking on the East Coast, and we got some pals chatting away about Magic the Gathering. What's going on? How's your day been?
Day has been all right. looking at the data, publishing videos about the data, trying to make videos that... It's honestly kind of fun. Just released a video today, and I love when the audience catches on that a lot of the videos I do are like... The subject is about Magic, but like it's secretly about like how can we be like better gamers to each other and better people to each other. And I love when people start to catch wise about that. That's one of my favorite things to do is like, sure, data, that's interesting. The cards, that's interesting. But like my mom taught me how to play, you know, so like I'm interested
that's
in like
so sweet.
How do we create a good gaming experience with other people? And it just happens that Magic is a really efficient way to kind of like it's a good lens to get into that type of conversation. So it's been bringing me a lot of joy reading some comments today where people are like, I don't think he's even actually talking about Magic. He's just talking about being nice to people.
Isn't that sweet? That's really cool. Even with Am I the Bolus, we kind of like drop the pretense about it being Magic sometimes when people write in and they're like, am I the jerk here? It's like, yeah, you called a kid a bad word. I think it counts as being the villain. Why are you writing in? Why is this such a debate that you need a third party to intervene, you know? But I love that your mom taught you. I didn't realize that. I knew because from listening to the podcast, you talk about playing Magic with your family, and your mom loves her birds deck, you know. Tasha, she ended up building the Tasha deck, right? Because that's your mom's name.
We do have sort of like the Tasha deck as a family, but ultimately, gonna be honest, she was like, because the Tasha card is all about like stealing your opponent's spells, and my mom is just like, I don't need your spells, my spells are better. So like she's actually not all that interested, which is just hysterical. First,
Joey's mom's a spike, baby. The big
she's just like, why would I take your spells when I can just play my own spells? I'm just gonna attack you with my own creatures. That's more fun. It's hysterical to me.
I love that. Go, mom.
Yeah.
On the other hand, will steal your stuff. I love that. I live for that. It's nice that you come at it from like, I learned with the family, and that does definitely I mean, that should keep like a fire burning for the game in you for a longer time than most, I'd say, you know, because people get fatigued with this thing, even though it's like the best game ever made. Some people are getting tired, and it's understandable what with all the product coming out and a lot of stuff happening in the world today. But I do feel like if your family, if you're like, if your home base is like where you guys get to still enjoy that and spend some quality time, I can't imagine how like nice that must be, you know?
It's, I mean, the Thanksgivings are wild, I'll tell you that. But yeah, no, it is, it is fantastic. It has always been one of those things that reminds me of just like, listen, this is the social version of the game. The social aspect comes first. Hence the reason why I'm calling, I guess.
Okay. Okay. Do you want to get into that right away? We can. I would love to.
I suppose we can. People have already seen the title of this one, haven't they?
They have seen the title of this one. I don't know what we're calling it yet, but I do think it's going to give it away.
I think potentially,
a little bit.
So the thing, like, you know, we met up in MagicCon Chicago.
That's right.
And, you know, I was like, oh, let me think of an idea. And it like just hit me like, oh, I've actually done a video about a very divisive topic before, and I'd love to explore more in conversation with you here. I did a while back a video about walking away from a table, walking away from a game. And like, if folks want to find my full thoughts, I guess you can like go and watch that video, whatever. But hopefully we can dig into it more here.
Let's get into it. So when you say walking away, let's find out. Let's get a little bit more specific.
For walking away.
We've got so many different scenarios. Joey, what's the first one that comes to mind for you? What do you think of when you hear walking away from a game?
I almost want to like turn a question back around on you and ask, have you ever walked away from a table mid-game? But
I have. I'll take the reverse. I have left mid-game, but it was one of those like projected, I have a heart out at this time kind of thing.
Okay,
which on the scale of what, you know, acceptability, you know, it was agreed upon, it was forewarned, and it was discussed, and I feel like, okay, that gets a little bit more on the acceptable side of things, but it is still a bummer that we couldn't close it out before I had to go.
For sure. Yeah, and I think that's definitely a different monster, a different type of experience than the one here when we talk about walking away from a game. And there are some other, you know, details for us to pick apart with it. Mm-hmm. I think to, you know, finally get around to answering the question you asked, the immediate mental association that I think pops into a lot of people's heads is the image of a salty, sore loser throwing a tantrum kind of energy. Who's like mad that the game didn't go their way and who's walking away in a huff. I want to be very plain that that's not I don't endorse that energy. That's not what I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, the kind of person who thinks, well, yeah, you're going to swing at me with your board full of lifelinkers that'll stabilize you and let you have a fighting chance against the remaining players. Well, guess what? I concede before your damage.
Right.
And they, you know,
Yeah, no.
I think universally we could say that's a garbage move.
Quite. The thing that like this becomes an interesting topic to discuss for me is because I've seen a lot of very stark reactions to this like concept just in general. And if I'm being honest, I'm more than a little astonished at how many times I've seen people say that walking away from a game should never under any circumstances be an option at all. And that's kind of what I respond pretty strongly to. And so that's kind of where I'm coming at this conversation from. It is kind of like, for me, the version of walking away from a game that I find most interesting to discuss is like when someone else is being the bolus, how do we respond as players? And like, if someone else is doing something kind of disrespectful, either socially or for specific, like the substance of the game reasons, and those are two different things to dig into individually. But like, what is a graceful way to respond to that? And it's interesting to me that people don't think that walking away from a game can ever be an acceptable option. When for me, I'm like, sometimes it's possible that like that might be the thing that you need to do, even just to protect your own peace and to like, because sometimes people are, don't want to curse, boluses is the great word for it.
You know what? There's a list of acceptable words that we say that won't get bleeped, but you know, depending on the severity of it, we might have Ken ready to with the bleep button if you feel so inclined. So
oh no, it's great. He can just like bleep me to make it sound like I've been cursing.
I see. Okay. So you're talking about walking away from a table because it is not necessarily unfun, but probably because if you as a player feel like you've identified a point in the game where you feel like you would rather be like anywhere else,
Well, so I guess like there are kind of the two different versions of it. And I think one of them is very obvious and one of them is a lot more tricky. And the very obvious one is like when someone else is being really horrible in a very obvious social way, if they're being disrespectful, like Mark, I said, Mike, it sounded like Mark. I'm sorry about
it
that.
It sounded like Mark. Hey, I get that a lot since I, like an idiot, decided to use a pseudonym on the website. It's not your fault. People think of me as Mark Carbonza, the Mike Carrozza guy. So it's don't worry about it.
Michael Carbonara. So here's what I have to talk to you. Microford Garbanzo.
My government name. You didn't have to put me on blast like that, but my government name, Microford Garbanzo.
You see how hard it is to stay on topic with us sometimes? Oh, man.
Hey, that's the juice. Yeah. That's what people are here for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, there are the obvious times. And right. The thing that I was going to say is just, like, Mike, how sick are you of hearing about, like, the inappropriate anime playmat? Like, but people pull that mid-game sometimes, too, ooh, you know? So it's like, I was just like, I don't endorse that. And if I'm silent, that signals my complicity. So I'm not going to stay around and give a tacit endorsement to that kind of behavior or someone being disrespectful, low-key kind of sexist. I've had once in a game someone kind of like make jokes that were at the expense of my husband's ethnic group. Like that kind of, I'm just like, oh, no, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And they probably want to get a rise out of me. And I don't want to give them that satisfaction. And I certainly don't want to get into a lecture. So I'd rather just leave, alert event staff if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, if people get all pearl clutchy about like you walked away from a game, I'm just like, well, yeah, isn't that to me that seems like probably just, hey, I didn't like this energy and the game was not more important to me than people are. It's just kind of where I come down. So that's like the most that's the big obvious one, I think, is like when the social aspects get pretty disrespectful, removing yourself from a situation seems to me like it should be. That's cool. I don't think I'm a bolus for that. And that, no. Okay, so good to hear.
I agree. Totally. Look, I've gotten somebody banned from a store once because he kept saying the T word for a trans woman. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Not great, you know? I've also, eagle-eyed Commander's Herald readers will recognize this story, but on one of the columns early on with the sexy anime playmat thing getting into a very heated discussion, that was my story, all right? I offered the guy my own playmat. I brought two with me. He did not want it. He preferred to have a very, let's just call it a disgusting playmat, an underage girl with it's not good. It's not great. Don't care for it one bit. It made me very upset. I suggested here use my playmat. He said no. I said, then don't play with it, please. He said no. And I said, you'll need to find another pod or I'm going to find another pod. And then he left. So yeah, it's not great. And it feels like when you sit down with a group of people, there is like a level of respect that you uphold and there's a level of disrespect you can tolerate when it's in game. For instance, if you feel like you're being targeted unfairly, it might just be bad threat assessment, or it might be somebody who has just an abnormal amount of artifact destruction spells and he just happens to be getting your rocks, you know?
Sure.
And that's a little bit of in-game disrespect. You might be encroaching on somebody's fun, but it's not something that's gonna hurt them in the real world, let's just say. You know, it's not something that's gonna, like, if you apologize then and there, or if like the vibes of the game are still good, you can still have a good time and move forward. The moment you step over that line beyond just the game, when it comes to anything offensive or anything dehumanizing, like, it's totally within your right to step away. Why would you subject yourself to that?
Right. Like, so that is why when I see a lot of people like having a stark reaction, like being shocked that people would walk away, that's like one of the, I think, easy ins to this conversation is just like,
absolutely.
I know that everyone treats this game like an escape, but you know, if someone else is treating it like an escape and they're doing so at the expense of it being an escape for other people, I'm just like, that ain't going to fly. And again, I don't want to be tacitly endorsing bad behavior.
Agreed.
By sticking around and just acting like that kind of thing is all cool, because the reality is that it isn't.
Yeah. You don't have to be on the receiving end of the disrespect to not stand for it and pick up and go.
Yeah, absolutely. You can be a kind person and still tell people to get lost. Like those are things.
Absolutely. 100%.
And if you don't like confrontation, that's also, I totally understand that. And I'm also like, I probably should have led with this up front, but like, I'm very plainly not saying that walking away from the game is the best or the first option. My surprise that I wanted to register is just that a lot of people say that it shouldn't ever be an option. And that's the thing that I want to push back about and like have the conversation. But again, that was just like the first big obvious version of the conversation to kind of like open that door. The other trickier one that is much more of a, all right, Mike Zander, Mikeathy, let's have a conversation about this, are the actual, like, when the substance of a game could be a reason why someone wants to walk away from the table. Not just the social and the disrespect reasons, but also, like, when something happens in game where you're just like, I don't want to be part of this anymore either. And so that's why I wanted to ask that question up front is, like, have you ever walked away from a table mid-game? Because I've seen people walking away from tables for game reasons where I'm kind of like, you know what? I'm not going to lie. I kind of get it.
Absolutely.
But that is, I think, when the discussion gets a lot trickier and when people might be like, no, it's a bit more bolusy. They associate more maybe that temper tantrum. But like, as an example of a time that I've seen someone walk away from a game, it was like when the Beamtown Bullies came out, which can force your opponents to take creatures. And it was like, cool, here's an Eater of Days. You skip your next two turns.
Brutal.
Or here's a Hellcarver Demon. You have to sacrifice all of your other stuff in play. So then you are ostensibly still in the game, but you're also not playing Magic for probably 20 minutes.
Right.
And I saw someone walk away from a game there, and I'm like, I can't say I blame you. But I think there are a lot of people who have a stronger reaction to that because it is then it's a game thing, not a social thing, even though it is still a social thing. And so like that's just, again, where the conversation starts to get trickier and where I'd love to chat with you and go a bit more in depth about it.
Well, I love this first example for sure. I do have a couple that come to mind, but we'll get to those in a sec. I think the Beamtown Bullies one is very clearly, if there's no way out of the situation that I'm in, and I am just essentially a wall for other players to punch against for value, I'm not going to feel amazing about that. No one's going to play their time warps and target me after I've had to skip a turn. Unless I've got some way to untap at every upkeep and instant speed stuff, like, I don't know, if Seedborn Muse and Leyline of Anticipation are out, maybe I'm less upset about getting the Eater of Days. But I'll say it doesn't feel cool when you're just sitting down to a table and you're like, hey, I'm excited to play this game I love so much, and I've spent so much time putting together stacks of cards and thought these will look good and feel good and come together really well. And then you just sit there and you get none of it because somebody decided, well, I'm going to take away game actions from you. Because I've played against a Beamtown Bullies deck before, and it's not great when it's built that way.
Yeah.
But Beamtown Bullies, like, when you see it and you want to be competitive about things, obviously your first thought is like, there's a lot of creatures with horrible drawbacks. They're bad.
Yeah. And I think this kind of goes again to something that you mentioned up front in your example of when you walked away, when you had a hard out, is that like setting expectations for the game environment is the move for everyone to do. And I would say there's especially a lot of responsibility on the Beamtown Bullies player to like make sure that they are being upfront about what's going on. But the reality is that some players aren't as familiar with how to do that. And also the reality is that there are some people who lie, which also happens.
Yeah, unfortunately.
and I know that a lot of people out there be like, play more removal, but like, girl, you can't exile a lie.
Get him, Joey. Get him. It's all snaps from me, baby. I'm in.
It's also not even the only like time that I've seen people walk away from a game, though. Because another one is with removal, where I saw someone who I have to assume they were in a game for probably 90 minutes already at this point, if not longer. And then an opponent cast a farewell and they were just like, you know what? I gotta go. And I was like, I don't have it in me to say that I blame you necessarily. I sense a person who feels a large amount of respect for their time and who has the sense that their time now feels like it's being wasted. And especially if you've been looking forward all month to playing Magic, or you've been looking forward to this con or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm just not ready for another bunch of time on this. Like, the strong emotion that I have in that instance is not towards a person who's like, I'm not going to put up with this. The strong emotion that I have in that instance is towards like, you know, the person doing the Beam 10 Bullies thing, the person who lied, the person, like, those are where my attention tends to go. And so it just, it struck me so interesting when a lot of the conversation that I see online about this topic is when someone walks away from the game, when someone responds in that way to a person who's being a bolus, we assume that the way that they're responding is making them a bolus as well, which just strikes me as odd. That's not where my attention goes in that particular endeavor.
Agreed.
But I also understand why there are things that complicate it. For example, when you walk away from a game, there are two other people at the table, most likely.
Yeah.
And their game is being affected by that. So, like, I get where people are coming from when they have this type of emotion, for sure. Yeah. And those are definitely things that complicate it.
I'm an Arami of the Dead Tide player sometimes. I break out that deck, and I know that I'm going to get more value out of my commander if there's more opponents out. If somebody concedes to a mass removal thing like Farewell, which... Look, Jason Ault has a lot of strong feelings about that card, and I echo those feelings. It is Joey, as a fellow Gravesman, you and I are on the same page of having Exile All Graveyards tacked onto that is a real shame, isn't it?
I feel fortunate that the people that I play with don't even feel the need to play that one. I think if I were to ever cast that spell, I wouldn't even feel joy or happy about it. It's just kind of where I come from.
Oh, happens
with Farewell. So I'm just
only place it's acceptable in is if you've got a bunch of emblems that are about to go off on your Planeswalker deck and you want to protect them. That's about it. That's the only place I could think of it, because that means you're about to win the game and we're not going to go for much longer. But I think that's, again, the time thing. It's a disrespect of time. And, you know, if you shut down somebody's deck so severely and they recognize that the writing's on the wall, conceding a game is not a forbidden action. It's kind of become like this unspoken rule of concede at sorcery speed, right? Socially, we agree sorcery speed is the way you concede a game. However, sometimes you don't get to go back to your turn.
Right.
See, like eater of days. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Or when people drop a time sifter out of nowhere and it's just like, well, who knows where the turn order is even going?
Yeah.
And someone may not even get a turn for the rest of the whole game. I understand why people feel like, I don't think I want to stick around to see this, how this goes, because this isn't what I wanted to do. I signed up to play Magic and I'm not getting to.
Which is why I do think that there's some merit to, like, so confrontation has this negative connotation to it, which I'm very much actively trying to take away. I think confrontation doesn't necessarily mean like an aggressive butting of heads. It just means confronting the situation. It just means like coming to the situation and expressing what's going on in you. So to me, if someone were to say Farewell the board and three other players groan, and the player who cast it is on their first turn off of a copied expropriate, you know, the rest of us could turn to each other and say, is this a time to scoop? And that's a fair thing. Or it's fair to ask, like, are you going to win the game? Are you going to take these turns and end the game in an interesting way? Or is this just kind of your goal is to, like, have us concede over the fact that it's just happening like this, you know? Because I think that if the gears are turning in my head, I'm going to be like, well, this is the game plan. And you know what? Congratulations. I want to concede. Let me ask the group. You know what I mean? I would want to walk away.
And I think, like, getting a consensus sounds like a great move. But the reality is that we're never going to get consensus every single time.
Right.
There are a lot of people who are like, no, I do want to play to my outs. And so that's why ultimately the place that I think I fall with this is just that, like, knowing when you're being disrespected, both in terms of social situations and in terms of game actions, I think that's a valuable skill. And kind of one of my mantras as of late has been, like, you can't set yourself on fire to keep other people warm. So even though I certainly sympathize with, like, if I do leave a game here because, I don't know, I got Helkiver demoned by a Beam Town, or someone played a Farewell 2 hours into a game or something like that. Even though that does have effect on the other two people who are at that table, I do trust that they're big kids and that they will be able to handle it.
Sure.
That's ultimately where I've kind of fallen, because, like, I don't know, I'm speaking hypothetically. These are, like, instances I've seen in terms of just, like, the game action stuff. But, like, I don't feel strongly about the person who's just like, I'm going to respect my time. The person I feel more strongly about is someone who's, like, not taking the game hint as much.
Right.
And I'd always rather be the person who walks away from a game than the person who made someone else feel like they want to walk away. And I especially don't want to be a person who makes others feel like they're the problem if they try to walk away. That is ultimately where I still kind of like come down. But I know not everyone will feel the same way.
I love that. I think that's very, very well put. I love that. You don't want to be the reason that people want to walk away, but you also don't want them to feel like they can't. And like, you know, they're not, they would be the villain if they did. Because what it comes down to is I think the big reminder is that it's a game. It is a game. It is meant to be played for fun among hopefully friends, whether old or new. As of just 10 minutes ago, we just met and sat down and are starting to pal around and play this game. It's a game. And so conceding, as long as it's not in response to like a game action that would have an effect on like that play. So for instance, if let's say that Beamtown Bullies guy was like, I gave you the Hellcarver Demon because, and it's goated, so you need to like swing at somebody at least. You play out those actions and then you say, well, this is it for me, unfortunately, and thank you and have a good day. I don't think anybody could be mad at that. If you're kind of like, yeah, well, I concede and the Beamtown, this thing's exiled before it hits the table. Shout out. I'm done. Peace. Like it's an attitude thing too. Like you understand the game enough to know when you're done with it, when you're able to recognize the disrespect to you. When does it become a thing where you're like, do they deserve the respect back? You know,
I
want to err like on the side as always, but like, you know,
I think if anyone is leaving a game in such a way that they're flipping the table as they go, right, that's not a thing I'm ever going to endure.
No, they can go screw themselves. But I mean, like, if somebody is like, hey, here's an Eater of Days, it's goated, but also I have like this pump spell that I'm casting on it, and you have to attack with it. You know, it's still on you to be like, well, here are the game actions that'll play this out for the rest of the table. But like personally, this happening, this resolving, I'm done. I think that's a fair way to show respect for the game and respect for yourself. I feel like that's where line, right? What do you think?
I like your take. I think that for me, it just ends up like, listen, try and find a classy way to do it.
Sure. Yes.
It is kind of the thing, just sort of ultimately. But like, I think when those experiences happen, it often feels like they cropped up on us in a way that like the other folks like did not properly prepare us for. They did not set up the expectations.
I'll say we've been hammering on Eater of Days, Beamtown Bullies a lot. And that's, look, it's fair. Like it's not a great feeling to be hit with that. And I'm not saying that that's like not a cool thing to do though. Like it is for sure maybe the right move in a bunch of pods, or maybe it could be a funny move. Like you're up against somebody with a fairy artisan and there's only you and two other players left. You give the opposite player a copy of Eater of Days. Uh-oh, fairy artisan sees that come in and has to make a copy of it. Beautiful. Now you've made two players skip their two turns. You know what I mean? Like, that's a cool thing to happen. But ultimately, I think in that moment, you'll probably get a dual concession or just two very angry people coming at you.
I guess that's what I was trying to say is, like, again, setting up the expectation is... Right. A pretty important thing there. And when, like, there are some folks out there who will try and not who don't want to give away their plan is usually the way that they'll view it, the way that they'll phrase it, maybe, like, they don't want to give away all of their tricks, but ultimately they are trying to be sly, trying to be like, oh, my deck has never done this before, and then they tutor three times or whatever.
Fair.
And or people who just straight up break deals during games, and like, so there are game actions that can make it feel like you've been disrespected because of the substance of the game, not just because of something socially. And so those are things that make you go like, eh, you know what, if you don't want to be around this, I begin to understand that. And I don't think that walking away from those experiences, like if someone behaved in those ways in any other social situation, I would remove myself from them.
Absolutely.
So we should treat games the same way. It's not some sacred realm that is not beholden to other social rules. It is still just a bunch of people around a table.
Perfect. I'll say, you mentioned breaking a deal. That's got some Shakespearean I bite my thumb at the energy right there for me. If like you break a deal, it is, I don't know if I I'm going to be removing myself, but I think that's going to be somebody I can't play with for at least a while, you know?
Sure.
I had an interesting experience not too long ago. I was on a stream with, well, he was a guest on the pod, Kuro Hitsuki's
Kuro
stream. And we ended up playing this game that ended up having five or six board wipes over the course of it. Stuff getting wiped constantly. Can't really establish anything. It was a lot of, hey, this will be the funny play to do, and then here's a board wipe, or here's a random thing off the top. Turns out it's a board wipe. And after about 2.5 hours, it got to my turn, and I said, I'm not having fun anymore. And I realized that it's a stream. But as far as I'm concerned, if anybody else is willing to concede, I've already cast my vote. So let that be what it is. You know, just kind of stating it as is, because if this were not a stream, I probably would have said, I would like to take 2 minutes away from the game so that I can just go out and get some fresh air for like a moment, because I am very upset, you know? So that's the kind of thing that can happen. And it's fair to be, again, this is a confrontational moment where I'm stating, you know, I'm breaking some sort of like social faux pas by saying I'm not having fun, right? I'm expressing that in a way. I'm getting that point across, and I'm hoping to affect a change here. And I would have probably said, I think I gotta pack it in and go. After, if we were playing a live game, or say I'm gonna shuffle up and wait for the next one. Unfortunately, I don't think this game is for me right now. And we'll be playing more games soon. I'm already signed up for another stream, and we're gonna have fun with that. But it's not something that brought any bad blood to a friendship, but it is definitely something that was frustrating in the moment and easier to get over when I said that.
And that's just it, right? Is again, registering my shock when folks are just like, no, you should never. Mm-hmm. The game just doesn't come before other people in any circumstance ever. And I wager that if you had like remarked upon that earlier, you might have like come away feeling a lot better about that experience. Mm-hmm. And so it again is an important skill for us to notice. How much do I actually care whether the elf deck wins, really? We don't need to. And I think that, you know, when we get really invested into a game, we almost accidentally train ourselves to put that ahead of other things. And it does not have to come before other things is the thing that I want to make sure that having this conversation sort of reminding people is just like, listen, protect your peace, because it's pretty important. And if folks get nettled, if folks get prickly about the fact that sometimes you're like, no, about some of those experiences, I think that says a lot more about them than it does about you. And I think that there are ways for you to exit environments where it feels like you're, oh, this is not the moment for me, as it turns out. And sometimes those sneak up on you. Sometimes people are a little underhanded. Sometimes people are not willing to set up expectations before the games begin. And in those times, like just being able to recognize those things is a valuable life skill. So again, for me, it comes back to just like, all right, let's use magic as a lens to figure out how to actually be good to other people and good to ourselves, because that's actually the whole point of this.
I love that. I think that's a perfect place to call this. I think that's like using magic as a lens to be better people, I think is exactly what you said earlier. We're using the game, but it's definitely still just about being kind to one another, but not forgetting to flip that kindness back on yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's
there you go.
That's sweet. So be kind to everybody, but also be kind to yourself. And hold on. Well, not everybody. Some people don't deserve the kindness when they are being the worst. Hold on a second. Now I got to backtrack. Okay. If somebody's saying that word that we're not saying, if people are doing the things that, if anime playmats are a little bit tasteless and you've got, you know what? There's some people worth being a little mean to sometimes. What? But
once again, you can be a kind person and still tell other people to get lost.
Set those expectations. You know, I mean, I know we said that we call it there, but I do like, what's an example of a deck? I have one, and I can start, but what's an example of a deck that you have to set an expectation for? So, for instance, I have my ninth Dr. Claire Oswald deck that I've been, it's a Grixis Upkeeps deck, which I've been very, very happy with lately. However, there are some cards that are, let's say, Recantation and Rumbling Crescendo, as well as Descent into Madness.
That's a lot.
Yes, they can all hit lands, which a lot of people don't like. However, I mentioned this when my start. I say, hey, I've got a couple things that can hit multiple lands, and my intention is to either not pop them unless it's time for winning, or for them to be a bit of a lightning bolt for lightning rod for when you've got removal. And that part I'll save for close friends. But is there, say, like a deck that you have that you feel like you need to set an expectation for, rather than you pull it out and say, this is my blank deck, and voila, that's the deck, you know?
I mean, this is kind of a loaded question on my end, just because any time that I pull a deck out, I tend to be very verbose about it. And I think I get good games as a result of that. Like, if I pull out my Wilhelt Zombie deck, I'm going to be very forthcoming about the fact that I don't have combos even in here, even though Wilhelt becomes famous for combos with like Poppet Stitcher and cards like that. And I'm just like, this is just dumb zombies. I want to play zombies go rar. Or if I have a Rule Zero deck, I built a Doctor deck where every time you cast the Doctor and it goes back to the command zone, it regenerates to the next Doctor.
I do love this deck. That's a fun deck idea.
Yeah, those are silly things. And so, like, I do have to be very about, like, here's the expectation. Here's the, yes, I'm still doing commander attacks. How do you guys feel about, like, how that would affect commander damage? Like, there are a whole bunch of those. And I want to be very upfront. You know, I did that video of, like, I tracked all my games for a year about, like, here's about when this has, like, ended games around this turn and stuff like that. So I tend to be very, very verbose. But, like, thinking of other examples of, like, other stuff I've seen as well, like, if anyone's playing something that even moderately brushes by poison and infect, like, and it's not even necessarily incumbent upon them. Sometimes I've seen stories of people, like, I played a game and then I attacked with something and I got someone to 10 infect, and then someone else piped up was like, oh no, our house rule is that it's 20. And it's just like, well, okay, the time was for you, was not now, mid-game, for you to pull that rug. Like, and so, like, those are, again, the types of things that happen mid-game that I can understand why a person would suddenly feel disrespected.
Fair.
But, like, being more forthcoming, taking the extra 5 minutes to make sure you get a good hour game always has been worth it for me. So I like to be way more upfront and forthcoming in those moments to try and answer your question. I know it's kind of a non-answer, but I really am I'll spend a minute and a half talking about my decks before a game begins if people really want to hear it, because I get excited talking about them too. So
that's a better answer than saying, you know, picking a deck and giving these points. You've mentioned being verbose, setting expectations, but you're also setting a bar, saying, I talk a lot at the beginning to ensure that people are on board, because then we have a much better time for the next hour, hour and a half that we spend together playing this game. And I think that's important. Spending the time up top and investing that energy there so that you don't have to kind of grit your teeth and kind of, like, you know, nod along later on. I'd say that's probably a practice that I'm going to be taking up. I think that's something that I can afford to be doing a lot more.
I prefer decks where, like, I want to lose in a fun way, and I think everyone else feels that way too.
Agreed.
Like, I love spectacular losses. So, like, if you're not having fun, then I'm not having fun. That's just kind of how this format works to me.
Yes.
And a lot of the discussion, the setting of expectations goes a really long way. And that's why something like, if I've caused a person to feel so uncomfortable that they want to walk away from a game because of how little fun they're having, I think that reflects more upon me, not upon them for feeling the need to walk away. So that is a way that I want to try and make sure that I pay attention. And so, you know, that's another thing. If you have me on again, I'll absolutely talk about the boluses who are just like, well, other people's fun isn't my responsibility. And I'm just like, well, good luck finding people who enjoy playing against you.
Oh, the sass really came out. Again.
Sorry.
Bring this sass next time you call in. We'll do the whole episode of that. I'll tell you what. Yes, your fun isn't my responsibility. No, buddy, it is. Anyway, we could save that for another time. Call in anytime you'd like. Joey Schultz, everybody. Make sure to follow EDH Retcast online. Give the podcast a follow. Subscribe to it on YouTube as well. Joey does a lot of videos on there. And where would you like people to follow you on social media as well?
If you look up Joseph M. Schultz, you'll find me. I'm more active these days on Instagram, just because it's a little bit less of a hellscape than some of the other social media platforms.
Definitely.
But I mean, they're all wild. But yeah, you'll find me being sassy and sweet and all types of weird nonsense. And
an absolute delight.
Thank you. I much appreciate it. Mike Stafford, we decided. Mike Stafford.
Mike Stafford. I think we landed on Mike Stafford.
Mike Stiffer. thank you very, very much. This has been a fun conversation, and I hope that it resonates with people out there. I know this is a tricky topic, but I think the game gets more engaging when we're willing to have tough conversations about Definitely. Some of the social stickiness that surrounds it.
Absolutely. Thanks again for calling in, Joey. We're going to head back to over to Solani and Morgan and chat about whether or not you're the ballist for your pet peeve. Spoiler alert, I don't think so. Thank you for calling in, Joey Schultz of the EDH Reccast. What a pleasure it was to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling in. Really, really wild. I can't believe it. I've been listening to the EDH Reccast for, God, the entire time it's been out. And it just, what a surreal feeling it is to talk to you, buddy. Thank you for calling in. And thank you for bringing this discussion to us because, well, I think it's necessary. I think it's the right time. It's perfect. I had a great chat, and I'm ready to talk with my sweet, sweet co-hosts about this topic. Morgan, before we get into the question, we got to let the folks at home know, what's our voting system like?
It's democratic, Mike. So that Thank means you. That one person's vote counts for more than the others. But I'll explain the math really quickly for those who aren't certain about how it works. So myself, I count for one vote. My opinion counts for one vote. And so does Solani's. He will vote and it will count as one vote. However, Mike, when you vote, it counts for three.
Hell yeah, dude. I'll take it. So I got three points. You get 1 point each. I decide essentially, but we all get the vote and the illusion of choice is there. So we get to decide whether or not Joey is the bolus. But what's his question? What's he asking, Morgan?
So, Joey wants to know, am I the bolus for walking away from a game to keep my peace?
That's a hell of a way to put it. It's so hard to discuss this without being like tipping the hat a little bit. You know, it's so like, even when I was talking to Joey, I was like, I don't think you're the bolus at all here, buddy. You know what I mean?
Well, you can't just spoil the ending like that.
Do you want it me to already happened in the interview. We
do you want me to
about
tell
about
you how Titanic ended?
Yes.
Please don't. Please don't. Please don't.
What happened?
It's 3 hours and I want to get all the way to the end.
Let's just say that James Cameron slams a door in your face.
I don't remember. You know what? Maybe I don't remember the movie so good.
The door?
The door?
What door?
The door that the both door. Of them could fit on, but only Rose gets on.
The only thing I remember about Titanic is old lady Rose going and throwing the jewel of the sea or whatever into the water again.
You didn't watch it 10 times when it was in theaters?
You know, this is the kind of stuff you say that makes me think you're older than me. Because
no, I'm the youngest one.
I know you are. I know that.
I'm just a little gremlin.
This.
He just loves the Titanic.
Didn't you watch Titanic 10 times in theaters? No, of course not.
We're supposed to be talking about Joey, right?
Yeah, we are supposed to talk about Joey. Michael, go ahead. Tell us how you're feeling about what Joey had to say.
No, I think you're always allowed to walk away. It's in the rules. It's in the comprehensive rules. You're always allowed to concede. I know that's the pedantic point that everyone loves to bring up, right? Like, obviously,
yeah,
there's more.
To bring it up.
There's more into it. There's also the rule that says you could use the wizard store locator to find events near you, but no one cares about that one.
Could you imagine if in the comprehensive rules it said you are not allowed to concede? Like, what would that look like?
I mean,
what would that look
just
like?
Point to your platinum angel. I can't lose the game.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious that it's okay to concede. In fact, I wish more people conceded more often. And that's not in a snarky, haha, I want to win sort of thing. It's just like,
sure.
I come from a chess background in a way, right? I play a lot of chess. And there, once you start losing, you're just kind of like supposed to concede. It's like no one wants to waste anybody else's time when it's pretty evident that there's nothing that you can do to come back, right? If you want to leave the game just so that you can keep your peace, like maybe you want to do something else. Maybe you just don't like the vibes. This is a vibes-based podcast. Maybe you just don't like the vibes.
Shout out.
Then you should be allowed to leave, you know?
Yeah, I think that the only thing here is that, you know, we're talking about Joey specifically bringing like, hey, this is, there's something going on that you're like uncomfortable with.
The vibes are off.
If you're uncomfortable with it, who cares what the other three people think? Like, honestly,
really? Yeah.
Like, if you're not having a good time and you're upset, you're here by choice. Like, no one's forcing you to stay there, even though there's societal and peer pressures to stay in a game through the end. It doesn't matter. You're playing a game. This is just an expensive way to waste time, you know? Like,
yeah.
And if it's no longer doing that in a way that makes you feel happy, then it's best for everybody. Just like, make sure you're having a good time. You'll feel better. You don't have to worry about your opponents feeling like, oh, I'm making this guy feel bad. I don't want him to be here, unless they're being a jerk, in which case call them out. But seriously, it's like, it doesn't really matter. These are just games.
You're more important.
And like, your own self health is more important. You know, you don't owe this to anybody.
Sure. Morgan, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There's a lot of nuance between, you know, the vibes are off. And I mean, I want people to know and understand that it is always okay, whether you're with strangers or whether you're with friends, to say, you know, hey, Mike, straight up not having a good time. I hate this for whatever reason. Like, you don't even necessarily need to give a reason, really, or justify it. Mm-hmm. Just say that, like, you know, maybe something happened that day and, like, you know, you're just thinking about it as you're looking at cards in your hand and you're just like, yeah, this is just not where I want to be. So I'm going to have to, like, do it mid-turn. You know what I mean? Like, just really, it comes down to the comfort level and your own personal, like, mental capacity and bandwidth. Like, it is always okay to walk away. Ideally, you know, we're not the table flipper or, you know, the person who's saying, you know, okay, Carozza, well, your turn sucked and took 40 hours and I hate your deck and you're
and you only
animal
played
monster.
One land.
And you played one land, like, you know, just like the garbage rat you are. And, you know, I mean,
these are my government names.
There's also the, you know, the nuance of speaking your mind. But I mean, try to be kind to people. And, you know, if you say like, hey, you know, I just need to bounce out. I need to get a breath of fresh air. I need to maybe wait till next game to, you know, figure something out. Always, always, always do it. And if people make you feel bad for that, do not play with them again. And I mean, tell them, say, hey, you are not making me comfortable in this situation. I don't like it. You know, you're continually badgering me. You're like, oh, why don't you just play it through? I promise you, you do not have to. And I really want to stress that. I used to run an LGS and I did tournaments and I would tell people, I said, if there ever comes a time you're not having fun, whatever reason, tell your opponent, take the win, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. End of story.
And it feels like there are people out there with, like, you know, there's a threshold that you hit. Where it's not that in between, like, hey, I'm not having fun, but maybe this could turn around. It's really when you cross into that zone of like, I have not been having fun and I need to express that. Good.
And
do it.
It's
say
like
something.
Okay to not have fun with your friends.
Right? Yeah, that happens.
So, like, even if you spent all this time, got all these people together to try and have a good night, sometimes it's just not going to work, and that doesn't reflect upon you. Mm-mm. You know, it's called the fundamental attribution error, right? People are far less likely to attribute environmental factors to a person's actions as opposed to like an inherent personality, right? So you could have a really bad day, or someone else could be having a really bad day, and they could leave and they'd be like, look, I'm just not having a fun time, and you'll feel bad, but it's not because like that person's a bad person necessarily, or you're a bad person necessarily, as long as you're not doing something to actively make the space more uncomfortable for people. Mm-hmm. It's just that sometimes people have bad days and that will reflect in their actions. So don't take it personally. If someone's being a jerk, they should tell you, and you should kind of get the sense of that over time that you're being a jerk too. Like that's something you learn how to do
at some point.
Just be reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, I as someone who has gotten used to having to call some people out for being not so great, because, you know, you could see it on other people's faces and somebody's going to say something, right? It's something that you get good at as time goes on, but you don't always need to. Sometimes you just got to be like, hey, this isn't it. This is not worth it right now for my headspace. I can't ever say that Joey's the bolus for this topic. walk away. It's fine. You know, that it's like, you are important. You're more important than a game. I'll say, don't concede in response to an attack trigger. You know, that kind of stuff is nasty. We're talking about leaving because the outside of the game is more important or more impressive in the way that it's having an effect on your time. So that's an easy not the bolus out of me. I think we were going to do a little bit of a mailbag, but I think we're going a little long this one, and we'll have to save it for next time.
Well, there is something I want to talk about that you just brought up, though. Maybe we could use this as a denouement into the end of the episode.
Yes.
You know what that word means. You went to a French high school.
Yeah, it's a French word.
But you were talking about how, like, knocking out a player early, right? And then they feel like crap. I think it's, like, a major flaw of EDH. So, like, the concession, it affects the game, but it doesn't affect the player getting knocked out. Like, either way, they're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's actually kind of a bit of a flaw in the format that games are capable of going on far past the point of one player getting removed from the game. I think we should talk about that and what to do about that, because there's often a scenario where it's like, I'm playing this, let's say, Voltron deck, right? I could kill a player, but if the other two have removal and I didn't read that properly, the game's going to go on for another five turns and that guy's just going to sit there like, oh, okay. It's like, what do you do in that scenario?
I mean, this is actually perfectly in line with what the mailbag is today.
Oh, yeah?
That we had prepared.
Well, then why don't you read the mailbag and we'll we'll cut 10 minutes of this out in editing.
Okay, the mailbag is ringing.
It's the mail. That's the mail sound.
The mailbag is ringing.
Better pick
okay,
it up.
Okay, I'm gonna be quick about it because I wrote about this one. Should be coming out. Okay, here we go. Hi, Mark. I recently discovered your column and spent all afternoon reading it. Reading your column, I can't help but dwell on a situation that happened to me recently. Maybe I could have done without reading the part where he says he read my column all the whole time. Within the last 9 months or so, I got back into Magic after a long break and started frequenting a new-to-me LGS that is easily the best store environment I've ever played in. This game was me on Omnath Locus of Mana, which is
the green one.
Two and a green 1/1 Omnath that gets +1/+1 for each unspent green mana you have, and you don't lose green mana as steps and phases end. So the game was me on Omnath, a group slug deck next in turn order after me, and two decks I honestly cannot remember. One may have been Arista Redeemed deck. The group slug deck resolved an early Descent into Avernus. Descent into Avernus, of course, is an enchantment that at the beginning of your upkeep, you put two counters on it, and then each player creates two X treasures and gets dealt X damage, where X is the amount of counters on it. So it can snowball really quickly. So the group slug deck resolved an early Descent. I was still fairly new to the LGS at this point, but had seen enough of the group slug player to know that they build powerful and fast decks. As happens, an early Descent sped up the game, and I was doing my thing on Omnath, playing lands and mana increases like Extra Planar Lens, Caged Sun, Doubling Cube, etc. I was also drawing quite a bit of hate because people are always scared of the spin down dice hitting on sitting on Omnath. I try to play for more interesting wins than lethal commander damage. I find that it's usually unfun for me and the table when it's so easy to make them bigger. Between the aggro from threat assessment and the damage from Descent, I was at 8 life going into my turn. At this point, I'd been making noise about how Descent was going to kill us and how it needed to be answered, but to no avail. On the Descent player's next turn, I would have died to the Descent damage, so I looked through everything I had in hand, everything on the field, and counted, recounted, and I found my out. I played a Rogue's Passage, made 24 mana, and used Rogue's Passage to deal exact lethal commander damage to not be knocked out of the game at the next upkeep. My personal belief is that commander etiquette says it's rude behavior to knock one person out early in the game, especially if you aren't going to take control and quickly end it. We get together to play commander for a social experience and to play commander. Being removed from the game early just feels bad. Here's why I may be the bolus. I didn't take immediate control and find a way to quickly kill the other two opponents immediately after stopping the Descent player, but I did eventually win the game. I explained what I was doing, why I was doing it, and why I felt it was a reasonable course of action given the situation, and the group slug player was still pretty upset. This was the second and last pot of the night, and they packed up and left, complaining loudly the entire time. I definitely could have chosen to dig and failed to find interaction like Naturalize, Frozen Grip, or Terastodon to deal with the Descent threat and let them have the kill on me there and King made, but I was also rubbed the wrong way by what felt like my opponent's lack of concern for my possible solo early removal from the game. Or maybe that's just a selfish interpretation of my etiquette rule mentioned above. In any case, am I the bolus? Sincerely, Big Man of Rules. So, the gist is Omnath get big and you are going to die the next turn and be knocked out of the game just as early as you knock somebody else out, and you feel bad about knocking. Why do you feel bad about knocking them out?
It's a flaw of the game. It's not a flaw of the players.
There we go.
Like the fact that you can snipe one person and then have the game last for another 10 turns is a legitimate flaw in the gameplay of EDH. Like, there are strategies that will make it very easy to kill singleton players, and that's powerful because it stops people from just spending their whole day setting up and then eventually killing everybody immediately. Like, that needs some counterplay. It's the problem is that the counterplay really sucks for the guy that's getting countered, right?
Right.
So what do you do in that scenario? It's like the first thing you could do is try not to put yourself in positions where that often happens. Like the way the guy talked about the Omnath deck, it makes me feel like he doesn't really like playing it, or doesn't like playing it for this specific reason.
What's lucky is that he sent the deck list over, and he doesn't like playing the win con of commander damage, but there's a lot of like really cool win conditions and interesting ways to play Omnath that are all over this list, you know, like Hydra Broodmaster's monstrosity to make a bunch of Hydras, and then, you know, like a bunch of like, you get so many cards in hand that maybe like you can do a Psychosis Crawler effect, like you pull a Soul's Majesty and then you get yourself like 30 cards, you know. It's so there's a lot of different ways that you could win with this deck. Like, it's really cool, and that's kind of what he's saying is like, hey, I could have totally gone through my interaction, but instead, in the end, it was just best to just take this player out, and I feel bad about it. And I just don't think that it's fair to feel bad about somebody. Like, you defended your win against somebody who did not care about your own quick exit.
I also think it's a flaw with Descent, or Ascent into Avernus. I think that card is not well designed.
You don't like Descent into Avernus?
It has the exact problem that everybody is talking about, where it just cuts the game too short for a lot of players.
But that's the thing. Some people need that. Some people need that as the last game of the night. You know, that's a fun one.
It's true.
I can get behind Descent into Avernus, but I most definitely did take it out. And like, I've taken it out and put it back in, depending on the kind of game I want, with my Ninth Doctor Grixis Upkeeps deck. Like, some turns you start with the turn with 20 damage and like, you know, 20 treasures, and then next turn it's like, whoops, I guess I gotta die.
And I guess that's correct, but the other flaw with EDH kind of comes in here, and that's you can't really sideboard. Like, you would have to include singleton copies of other cards you'd want to include in the deck beforehand, right? Which that already puts a lot of people off. Like, very few people do that.
Right.
So your options are either carry around an extra 15 cards in these cramped deck boxes that can really only hold 100 if you're sleeving them, or, you know, just draw it and not play it if you don't. It's a mess.
Yeah.
Like the issue.
Yeah, but then some games, people don't mind you being like, hey, look, I drew this really unfun card. And, you know,
it's very difficult to modulate the type of gameplay you want without switching decks entirely. Like,
true.
So I don't have a solution for any of this. It's just interesting to think about.
I think your topic is interesting, saying that the flaw is that it can carry on beyond a player losing, which like you can't do in 1v1. That doesn't happen in 1v1.
Yeah.
One player dies, then you can't play against yourself. So you know, it only happens in this kind of format, a multiplayer format. And then there's no real telling how long a game could go. As someone who loves a Zulaport cutthroat strategy, I will say I rarely kill one person at a time. But I also
sound like
kill
an absolutely
anybody.
Unhinged serial killer when you say that.
I rarely kill one person at a time. I do think we should call this episode to a close, to borrow a phrase from our caller, Joey, and say good evening, good morning, and good night to all our listeners. Thank you so much for listening. You can check us out at Am I the Bowlcast on Twitter. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. Make sure you follow our link in the description to sign up for Cardsphere. And follow me at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza. Morgan, you can be found at?
I am at Indigo Gentleman on the site still and currently known as Twitter.
Gorgeous. And Michael, where do you want people to check your stuff out?
People can find me at gamesfreaksa.info. Those are the letters SA and not the word.
Very important to specify the letters.
I should just get the other domain. I should just get both.
You should do it. You should do both. Anyway, that does it for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.